You know, it's funny how our brains have been totally rewired over the last 10, maybe 15 years. If you're listening right now, you've probably noticed this yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Whenever we see a breaking news alert, about a controversial interaction between the police and the public, maybe it's an arrest gone wrong or a protest getting chaotic, there is this immediate collective reflex that we all have.
Right, it's the very first question everyone asks.
Exactly. We all just immediately think, was there a body camera? Did someone record it? It's basically the modern version of Pixar. It didn't happen, but with incredibly high stakes for everyone involved.
Yeah, it's that basic human instinct to look for the objective truth. We want to see it with our own eyes.
And underneath that instinct is a massive assumption. We assume that if the officer's wearing that camera and, if that little red light is blinking, we're gonna get the neutral referee.
The ultimate truth teller.
Right. We think the video is going to just settle the score once and for all. But I've got to tell you, after spending time with the material for today's deep dive, I feel like that assumption is, frankly, just a little naive.
It is naive. And honestly, that's the hard truth we really have to grapple with today. The source material we're looking at makes a very compelling and honestly kind of unsettling counter-argument.
Yeah.
It argues that the camera's just a piece of hardware. I mean, it's literally just a plastic box with a lens and a battery.
Yeah.
The real story isn't the recording itself.
So what is the real story then?
The real story is what our source calls the evidence pipeline.
The pipeline.
Yes, the pipeline. It's everything that happens to that digital file after the encounter on the street. It's the bureaucracy, the software, the servers, the people typing on keyboards in a back office.
Okay, let's set the stage here for you guys listening. We are diving into a thought piece by attorney Eric Sanders. It's from the Sanders firm PC, and it's titled, "When the Government Controls the Digital File, It Controls the Story."
A powerful title.
I have to say, just that title alone gave me chills. It completely shifts the goalposts of how we think about this stuff.
It really does. It moves us entirely away from asking, is there a video, to a much, much more complex question, which is, can you prove the integrity of the record system?
I'm really excited to peek behind the curtain here because usually, when we talk about police accountability, we talk about the streets, we talk about adrenaline, split-second decisions, use of force. We definitely don't usually talk about database administrators.
Right, but that is exactly where the narrative is constructed. Sanders argues that things like administrative logs, metadata, retention
The
schedules,
boring stuff.
exactly, the stuff we usually think of as boring back office paperwork. He argues that this is actually civic infrastructure.
Civic infrastructure, that's a pretty heavy term for computer logs.
It is, but think about it like a bridge or a water pipe in your town. If the infrastructure is broken, the public isn't safe. Sanders is saying that these logs are the only way to know if what you're seeing is real transparency or just a curated reality that someone decided to show you.
Wow. So let's unpack this idea of the pipeline. The source material uses the NYPD as a primary case study. Now, is this just a critique of New York? Are they doing something uniquely wrong?
No, and Sanders is very clear on that point. We need to impartially look at his argument here. He uses the NYPD because of its sheer scale.
Right, the size of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you have a department that huge, you're talking about tens of thousands of officers generating petabytes of video data. The pipeline becomes visible in a way it just isn't in a small town.
Because you can't just have, like, a sergeant named Bob keeping all the videos on a thumb drive in his
All
desk.
right, at that massive scale, it's an industrial operation, it's a factory of evidence.
It's a managed ecosystem.
Yes. You have activation protocols, categorization tags, review chains, cloud storage systems. The scale exposes the underlying structure. But the crucial point to remember for today's deep dives is that this applies to every agency.
Big or small.
The local sheriff, the state police, the FBI. As soon as any agency buys body cameras, they instantly inherit these exact same governance questions.
So whether it's a massive city force or a five-person department in a rural county, the fundamental problem is the same. The government creates the file, stores the file, and controls the file.
And as the title says, when they control the file, they control the story. Sanders calls out this magical thinking we have about body-worn cameras. We think their mere existence just automatically creates accountability.
Like a magic wand.
Exactly. But the research is actually pretty mixed on that. They don't magically fix human behavior. The outcome depends entirely on governance, the rules of the system itself.
Okay, so let's talk about those rules. This is the part of the deep dive where we really get into the mechanics of how the truth can just disappear. Sanders breaks this down into what he calls the five control gates.
These are essentially the choke points. These are the specific moments in that pipeline where the shared fact of a video can be neutralized, shaped, or just completely buried.
Let's start with gate one, which he calls existence or capture. Now, this seems simple enough to me. Did they hit the button or not?
You'd think it's a simple on-off switch, right? But it's actually much more nuanced. Capture includes things like late activation.
That's when the camera starts rolling, but the argument or the fight is already in full swing.
Exactly. Imagine you see a video on the news that starts with a suspect screaming and lunging at an officer. As a viewer, you think, wow, that guy is dangerous.
Right. It looks terrible.
But you missed the 2 minutes prior where the officer might have been escalating the situation or provoking him.
It's like walking into a movie halfway through. You don't actually know who the villain is.
Precisely. If you miss the escalation, you've fundamentally changed the story. Or, on the flip side, there's early deactivation, where the camera cuts off before the situation is fully resolved.
And if there's no video at all, or it starts late, what's the usual excuse? I feel like we always hear, my battery died, or it malfunctioned.
Right, or I was stressed and I just forgot. And here is the really key insight from the source material. Without an audit trail, those excuses are entirely untestable.
You just have to take their word for it.
Exactly. The institution explains the missing footage as stress or malfunction. And because they control the system, we have no way to verify it.
It's basically the dog ate my homework, but somehow that's acceptable in a court of law.
And that leads us perfectly into gate two, which is classification. Honestly, reading this part of the source material, this is the big aha moment for me.
Really? Tell me about that.
I just never thought about how a file gets named as a form of power. It's the sneaky gate. Sanders actually calls it the most underestimated control point.
Walk us through it.
Think about the workflow. An officer records an encounter. That generates a raw digital file. Now, that file has to be tagged with a label so the computer system knows what to do with it.
Like tagging a photo on your phone so you can find it later, or filing an email into a folder?
Exactly like that, but with massive legal consequences. Does the officer tag it as use of force, or do they tag it as routine patrol, or maybe just general inquiry?
And why does that specific tag matter so much?
Because the tag completely determines the file's destiny. It dictates how long the file is kept, who reviews it, and how hard it is to find later. If a violent encounter is mislabeled as routine, it might fall into a digital bucket where it's never once reviewed by a supervisor.
So a simple clerical error, literally just checking the wrong box on a screen, can effectively bury crucial evidence without anyone ever explicitly hitting delete.
Precisely. It hides complexity behind boring administrative labels. It's not censorship in the dramatic movie villain sense. It's not someone shredding documents in a dark, smoky room.
It's just administration.
Exactly. It's administration. But the end result is exactly the same. The truth gets lost.
Which leads right into gate three, which is preservation. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between just storing a file and preserving it?
Well, storage is simply keeping data on a hard drive somewhere. Preservation is about the rules of survival for that data. Most systems have automated retention schedules. A routine patrol video might be auto-purged by the software after 90 days just to save server space.
Ah, I see where this is going. If it was misclassified in Gate 2.
Then Gate 3 kills it, yes.
Nah.
If a file isn't marked for illegal hold, the system might automatically delete it. And once it's purged, the story is completely insulated from contradiction.
Because the evidence is gone.
Right. You can't prove what happened because the record is gone, and the agency could just throw their hands up and say, well, we just followed standard retention policy. The computer did it automatically.
It's a perfect bureaucratic black hole.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say the video exists, it was tagged right, and it wasn't deleted. We still have gate four to get through.
Yeah.
Access.
Access is all about who gets to see the video. Does the public get to see it? Does the lawyer for the person who was arrested get to see it? Access control allows the institution to, as Sanders brilliantly puts it, slow the truth down.
This is what he calls the escalation tax, right? I found that concept fascinating. The idea that you have to pay a toll, whether that's in time, money, or energy, just to see a public record.
Exactly. If you have to file a Freedom of Information request, wait 30 days, get denied, file an appeal, wait another 60 days, and then maybe hire an attorney to sue the department.
That is a massive tax.
It is. It filters out 90% of people who simply give up because they don't have the resources to fight that hard.
So the institution effectively controls the flow of information just by making the faucet incredibly hard to turn.
And that intentional delay feeds directly into gate five, timing. Sanders calls this narrative hardening.
Narrative hardening. That sounds almost psychological.
It is very psychological. Delay is a weapon in public relations. If a controversial incident happens today, the police usually put out a press statement almost immediately. They'll say, suspect reached for waistband, or officer feared for safety.
Right, and that becomes the official story. That's the headline on the evening news.
But the video of the incident might not come out for 6 months.
So for 6 entire months, that official story is the only story out there.
Exactly. It cements itself in the public mind. By the time the video actually comes out and maybe completely contradicts that initial story, people have moved on. The outrage has faded.
Or their memories have just faded. They don't connect the video to the headline they read half a year ago.
Exactly. Delay normalizes the absence of evidence. It allows the institution to say, we're just being careful with the investigation, when in reality, they're letting the narrative concrete dry before anyone else can walk on it.
It's incredible how these seemingly boring administrative steps, tagging, storing, timing, are actually profound mechanisms of power.
They really are.
But let's shift gears a bit. The source material moves from the highly technical stuff to the human element. Sanders talks about the human dynamic.
Yes. This is where we look at what happens in a courtroom, or even just the court of public opinion, when footage is missing.
He calls it the psychology of missingness.
Right. It addresses a fundamental human trait. We hate vacuums. If there are missing minutes in a video, jurors don't just sit there and look at a blank screen. They actively fill that gap in their minds with assumptions.
And this is where the power imbalance between the state and the citizen really shows up, isn't it?
It is. Okay. Because police inherently represent authority, procedure, and order in our society. So when an officer explains a gap by saying, the battery died, or I forgot to hit the button in the heat of the moment, it sounds plausible to a jury. It sounds like common sense.
It just sounds like a workplace glitch. Hey, my laptop crashed. We've all been there.
Exactly. Whereas the civilian involved in these interactions is highly traumatized, extremely emotional. Maybe they were yelling or resisting. Their version of what happened in that unrecorded gap sounds uncertain or fragmented. It sounds chaotic.
So the missing minute essentially converts a factual dispute about actions, like, did the officer hit him, into a dispute about credibility. Who do we believe?
And credibility contests are where, as Sanders puts it, public trust goes to die. That's a direct quote. Because the institution has a massive structural advantage in any credibility contest.
That makes so much sense.
And this creates intense polarization. You get two very distinct camps. One side sees the missing footage and immediately screams conspiracy, cover up.
Right.
The other side sees the exact same missing footage and says, well, it's just inevitable imperfection. Technology fails. People make mistakes.
And the real tragedy of this whole dynamic is that without proof, both sides are just guessing. Nobody actually knows.
Both are guessing. And that fundamentally represents the failure of the body camera experiment as it was originally pitched to us. The camera was supposed to provide shared facts. Instead, the pipeline has just relocated the argument to a place where we can't even see the answers.
So how do we fix this? Because I have to admit, this sounds pretty bleak so far. But Sanders doesn't just admire the problem, right? He actually proposes a comprehensive solution. Mm-hmm. And he uses a metaphor that I think is really, really helpful for you listening to wrap your head around this. The deed.
Yes, the chain of title metaphor. Think about buying a house. You don't prove you own a house just by standing on the front porch and shouting, it's mine.
Right, nobody would accept that. You need paperwork.
You need a deed. You need legal documents showing the clear transfer history of that property. Sanders argues that the exact same logic has to apply to digital evidence. You can't just produce a video clip and say, here's what happened. You need the audit trail that acts as the deed for that video.
But when we say audit trail, let's be really specific for a second. We aren't just talking about lines of computer code that nobody can read. What specifically should we be looking for in these trails?
It's a mix of technical and administrative proof. For example, let's go back to that the battery died excuse we talked about earlier.
Okay, let's look at that.
If a department says the battery died, don't just tell me that in a press conference. Show me the system pulse logs. These body cameras are smart devices. They log their own internal health every few seconds.
So there should literally be a file that says battery at 2% right before the device shuts off.
Exactly. And if you check the log and it says the battery was actually at 80% and then the recording suddenly stopped, well, now we have a very different conversation on our hands.
That is powerful. And what if they say it was just a clerical error that mislabeled the file?
Show me the audit logs of who changed the tag.
Yeah.
Who exactly logged into the system, changed the tag from use of force to routine patrol, and at what exact timestamp did they do it?
And if the video was delayed for 6 months before the public saw it.
Show me the progress notes in the system.
Yeah.
Why was it held up for so long? Was it a genuine policy hold, or was it just administrative friction designed to delay the release?
So it's really about moving from a trust me model to a show me model.
Exactly. Transparency based on untestable assurances. You know, trust us, we have the video, we're reviewing it, but we can't show you yet. That's not transparency at all. That is permission.
Permission.
Yes. They are permitting you to know only what they want you to know, when they want you to know it. Real transparency creates artifacts, documents and logs that actively prove the integrity of the record.
This is a huge paradigm shift. Now, Sanders outlines 7 pillars of what a real functional public ownership model looks like. I want to run through these quickly because they paint a really clear picture of a system that actually works for the people.
Let's do it. It's a great roadmap.
First up, he lists routine outputs.
Meaning, these audit logs shouldn't be special, rare requests that take months to fulfill. They should be generated automatically for every single file. You get the video, you get the receipt. It should be totally boring and standard operating procedure.
Make the proof part of the package. Second is constrained discretion.
This is huge. The system should not rely on a human being remembering to hit a record button during a high-stress event. We need systems where recording is the default state, not an active choice. Humans are fallible under pressure. The system architecture needs to account for that.
Third is preservation discipline.
Hardened rules.
Yeah.
You cannot have a system where crucial evidence is accidentally purged to save cloud storage money. The architecture has to favor keeping the file over deleting it. It should be genuinely technically difficult to permanently delete something.
That makes total sense. Fourth is predictable disclosure.
No escalation tax. You shouldn't have to hire a civil rights lawyer just to see a public record that your tax dollars paid for. It should be released on a mandatory, predictable timeline.
Fifth is independent triggers. Now, this one feels like a very modern tech solution.
It is, and it's incredibly smart. Instead of relying entirely on officers to self-report an incident, use algorithms or external hardware alerts. If a service weapon is discharged from its holster, the camera automatically turns on. If a taser is deployed, the camera turns on.
Even if the officer completely forgets in the heat of the moment.
Exactly. Or if a police cruiser creates a sudden crash event in its telemetry data, that automatically triggers a review flag. It takes the human subjectivity completely out of the equation.
Sixth is consequence structures.
Simply put, if footage is missing, there must be a tangible penalty. If there are no real consequences for an officer turning off the camera, the behavior simply won't change. Policy without penalty is just a suggestion.
And finally, number 7, producible audit trails.
The deed must be legally part of the public record. If a case goes to court, the police shouldn't just bring the video file on a screen. They should be required to bring the logs that prove that the video is complete, unaltered, and properly handled.
It really is a massive shift in mindset. The goal here is a system designed from the ground up for verification, so we as the public don't have to guess if a missing minute is an innocent mistake or a strategic cover-up.
Precisely. Because right now, the public is essentially being asked to have faith. Faith in the completeness of the digital record, faith in the integrity of the institution holding it. But in a democracy, accountability isn't about faith, it's about proof.
It's fascinating because I remember when body cameras first came out, everyone thought, okay, problem solved, we have cameras now. But what this deep dive really shows is that the cameras were really just the starting line.
They were just the hardware. Now we desperately need the software. And I don't mean computer code. I mean the governance software, the rules, the laws, the rigorous audit trails.
The evidence pipeline is the real accountability tool, not the lens.
It is. Sanders sums it up perfectly in his piece.
Yeah.
He says public records aren't public until they're provable.
That's the sticky idea for today, I think. Public records aren't public until they're provable.
If you can't verify the chain of custody, you don't really have the objective record. You just have a story.
So as we wrap up this deep dive today, we want to leave you with a thought to mull over. We live in a democracy, and the foundational idea is that the government works for us. The government isn't supposed to own the story of its own power. The public is.
But here's the question you have to ask yourself. If you can't see the audit trail, if you are legally blocked from seeing the logs, the edit history, the system pulses, do you really own the public record? Or are you just being granted temporary permission to see a curated reality that the government has decided you're allowed to see?
It's a profound question of ownership versus permission. And until we have those producible audit trails, we might just be guests in our own house.
That's the sobering reality.
Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, everyone.